So I think the first thing that we will take up is LD 1571. LD 1571 is an act to amend election laws relating to party qualification. We have not had an amendment. We haven't had a bill analysis yet on this. We've had two bills that are similar in nature. And this is relating to a lawsuit that was brought against the state. So we need to do some corrective action to make sure we're in compliance with some of the issues the court had. And hopefully this bill will do that. So Danielle.
So LD 1571 is an act to amend the election laws relating to party qualification. So this bill creates a new category of political party defined as a minor party with a minimum of 5,000 and a maximum of 50,000 enrolled voters. A party with more than 50,000 voters, enrolled voters, is defined as a major party and nominates their candidates through a primary election process. Minor parties under the bill do not participate in primaries as proposed, but instead nominate candidates at state conventions. And they are required to file consent forms and statements of qualification for those candidates with the Secretary of State within 30 days of the convention or by August 8th of the election year, whichever occurs first. A minor party who did not have a candidate on the ballot in the last election qualifies to nominate by convention and have candidates on the general election ballot if they file a declaration of intent between December 1st and December 30th in an even-numbered year and submit by March of the next even-numbered year, about 15 months, an application to the Secretary of State that they have verified to have at least 5,000 voters enrolled in the proposed party. Major parties, because they will participate in a primary rather than a state convention, where strict balloting deadlines apply to primaries, must submit their application with verified voter enrollment within 12 months. So this sort of two-track system allows for the extended time period that the court found that the enrollment time period was too brief and that did not allow enough time for the parties to qualify under the existing process. The Secretary of State noted that to participate in a primary, there is a window of time which they need to prepare for a primary. So this proposal would address that by extending the period of time by which a minor party could qualify as a party, but rather than participate in primaries, they would participate in conventions in terms of getting their candidates on the general election ballot. The bill amends a provision in current law for the formation of a new party. For a party whose designation was not on the last general election ballot based on the vote for governor or president, known as the coattail method. So it is amended under the bill to reflect that this method of qualifying applies to whether parties nominate by primary or by convention. So right now, because we just have primaries and there is no convention process necessarily, it makes sort of essentially, I guess, a technical correction to apply the coattail provision to both major parties and minor parties. Under the bill, it provides how a minor party maintains its status, which is the same as a major party, except for the criteria that the number of voters enrolled in the last general election for a major party is 10,000, where it would be 5,000 for a minor party. The bill includes, and this is again in response to the court case, an administrative process similar to the one for candidate petition challenges by which the party may challenge a determination by the Secretary of State that it has failed to qualify as a party. These changes to the party qualification processes are intended to address the legal issues in the case and address, as considered by the U.S. District Court, and the preliminary injunction order that was issued last May. There was an issue raised at the hearing on this bill regarding the Libertarian Party specifically, but if there were a party that would have otherwise qualified, how would they maintain their status? So there was some discussion about putting in some retroactivity provisions so that a party that, as of today, a new party that has achieved the status under the law wouldn't have to go through the process again since you are enacting a new one. And I think the Secretary of State's office is here and can talk to you about that if you have further questions about that.
I have a couple of thoughts. And then Julie's here. She might have some suggestions. I might ask some questions of her as well. So one of the issues that I have with this bill that I think we need to fix is that I don't know that we should be creating like an A league and a B league for political parties. I think it should just be one standard. I think I understand that we need to give I'm going to use the term minor parties a chance to get on the ballot. I understand what the court is saying, and I agree with them. I think if we gave them more time, a longer time period to qualify as a party under some of the current statutes, I think that's a better idea than having two separate paths to get on the ballot. So that's, I just throw that out there for initial start of conversation. So if we can amend that in a way that gives them more time to get more people to sign up under a party banner, I think that might be a better way to go. So we'll go with thoughts, and then we'll get Julie Flynn up here eventually. Anyone? Representative Casas.
So what is the major opposition for having the two separate tracks, just that you don't want to differentiate major versus minor?
Yeah, because no matter... So if you have two paths to get to the ballot, some might argue that there might be inherent benefits on going one way or the other. I think that there should be as close to one path to the ballot as possible.
And I guess all that I'm thinking is giving folks that opportunity to engage at a lower level is kind of that stepping stone to the major party status, and without seeing huge negative financial implications for the state, I think it's a great thing. It engages more people in democracy. It allows for more folks to band together and try to, you know, push a thought, an idea, an agenda that resonates with them.
And I'm not against that. That's why the compensation on the other side is give them more time. Because right now, they have a shorter period of time. Is it a year, Danielle, to get a certain percentage of the amount of votes cast by for governor?
So if you're doing it by petition, in essence, you have 12 months, although you have to. There's a process embedded within there where you have to have the municipal clerks verify the signatures before they're submitted to the Secretary of State's office. So that's one of the issues that the court addressed, that maybe it's a little bit shorter than that. But the threshold under the bill for obtaining party status by petition, regardless of major or minor party, is still the same number of votes. That doesn't change under the bill. So it's not that the bill gives a fewer number of signatures. It's just in terms of achieving that party status, it just gives a longer time period to get those signatures, but then prescribes that their candidates are nominated by convention rather than primary.
So Danielle answered my question in a way more thorough way.
It descended from the heavens.
Dead. For those listening at home, I just got coffee delivered to me by the lead, the Republican lead of this committee. It did. It was a tribute offering from the House Republicans. I appreciate that.
Is that considered lobbying?
I'm still in office.
And I shouldn't have said signatures. I should have said enrolled voters, so demonstrate that they have that many enrolled voters. And that's just to get your initial party recognition. There is a higher threshold for continuing or maintaining your status as a party, which is higher, but it would be the same for both major and minor, which is 10,000. So you have to maintain that, you have to have 10,000 enrolled. If that's the method you choose to maintain your party status once you've achieved it. So it's the initial threshold is 5,000 enrolled voters. Yes. If that's one method of maintaining, yes.
Is what I'm saying clear, Representative Casas?
Mildly.
Well, we'll hope to get you there. Representative Schneck.
Thank you. Senator Mason, so I think what I'm hearing is that you want to get rid of the major party and the minor party designation somehow. So what would your thinking be?
No, I do not.
So what's the A list and the B list?
Well, that's kind of what, and I guess maybe I should clarify. I'm kind of talking about this bill and the other bill that we killed, when was it, Monday. So one of the options out there was that you could have a major party status and a minor party status, which is not currently the law. A minor party status would be like the Green Party or the Libertarian Party, and there would be a different path to a candidate nomination than what you and I would go through in the Republicans and the Democratic primaries. They would nominate by convention. I don't think that there should be two paths forward. I think there should be one path. So the give that I'm willing to make on by not doing that is to give further time to get more signatures to become a party, neither minor or major, to get on the ballot.
So you're saying that they need to have a primary rather than nominate by convention, and that's the change that
yes,
you're
sir.
Talking about. Okay,
that's what I would like to see. Yes, Representative Hickman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I get what you're saying, but I'm not sure. I mean, throughout political history, we have had major parties and minor parties in democratic republics, and even in parliamentarian republics. So I don't have a problem saying that we've got a different threshold that one has to go through to be defined as a major party or minor party. I think that from my understanding of this version of the bill, we're trying to allow for candidates from minor parties to have a place on the general election ballot as early in the process of them being certified as a minor party as possible. It sounds like what you were suggesting would be that a whole another year would have to take place before that party could qualify to have a primary election, precisely because of the time frame within which the ballots have to be prepared. So it would almost go against what the Supreme Court decided. On a different note,
sorry,
or a similar note, yes.
I was just going to answer your question. I thought you were finished. Go ahead.
Right now, we know that if a person is not enrolled in any party, major or minor, that they have a different path to get to the general election ballot, which is what we're trying to do for a minor party, is create a way for them to get to the general election ballot as quickly as possible. And that means they have a different path. And their path would be a state convention versus a primary election, whereas an unenrolled voter who is not a member of a party does not have any primary. They get on the general election ballot because they have to reach a higher threshold of signatures gathered. So there was really not that much equality in the current system, if you will, for how to get to the general election ballot if you are running in a minor or major party or unenrolled. So I'm not sure that I don't think that what you're saying solves the problem, and maybe I need to be corrected about that.
And this is where Julie might be helpful. So, Julie, could you come up to the horseshoe? So I think, Representative Hickman, you might be right to start. So, like, under the way that it is right now, yeah, we've already come past January 2nd, January 1st, or 2nd, one of those 2 days. We've already come past that point, so you might be right to start. But if there was another party that happened to start up, on December 30th, that would not be the case were we to pass something today. Do you understand what I'm saying? They would still have the two-year threshold. So let's say one day the Republican Party fell below 10,000 people, or the Democratic Party fell below 10,000 people. They would then still have another 2 years to get to party status again. Julie, did I explain that correctly?
I guess I want to maybe take a step back and just sort of frame the current law. the only definition of major and minor parties in the current law is that the major parties are the parties that got the highest vote totals in the last gubernatorial or presidential election, and the minor parties are any other parties. But our current process is you have to qualify to get on a primary ballot. So when a party qualifies, it's qualifying to participate in a primary in order to get candidates on the general election ballot. So the track from there is the same. There's not two tracks. This bill was intending to address, in one way, the court's concerns. And I will say, the court issued a preliminary injunction. They didn't rule that the deadline was unconstitutional. They said there was a likelihood of success on the merits, which is our concern. And so if we're addressing the date and adding an administrative complaint procedure, those are the two major things the court had concerns about. And in my testimony, I mentioned that, you know, the latest that we could move it and still have people go through a primary would be January 2nd. So it gives them an extra month, not as much time as they wanted, but I think once you see all the dates that you need to have an administrative complaint procedure work, you know, you can't go later than that because of the date for Iokava ballots. So, really there is no, other than the definition in law, there really isn't any different process for minor parties right now. That makes sense. And then I don't know if I answered the other questions, so if I didn't, I'd be happy to.
Representative Hickman.
Does the chair's suggestion frustrate the purpose of the law that you have put forward?
I think if we, if the idea is to have everyone go through a primary election like current law, then I think making as late a date for qualifying as possible, which we've suggested is January 2nd of the election year, the even-numbered year, and then adding that administrative complaint procedure, because the only option for the Libertarian Party was to go to court. There was no administrative option. And so that's an important piece to add in so that they could show potentially that our determination was wrong or that clerks made enough errors that they would have met the 5,000 registration threshold. So I think adding those two pieces, and then if you're going to do that, is to, you know, retroactively apply to the Libertarian Party so that they retain their status. If you're going to ease up on the restrictions, and I think something Senator Mason said is correct, they're in what I would call a double bind because they haven't filed, you know, we didn't disqualify them, so they weren't disqualified and they couldn't start again by December 30th of last year. So if you ease up going forward, that leaves them in a place where they have no way to qualify until next December to get on the 2020 ballot. So, you know, I think that's the third piece to going at it the other way, is potentially having a later date, having an administrative complaint procedure, they qualify for the primary, and then they get their status to continue on through 2018.
That's, if I can just chime in on, Julie just mentioned something that I do think is important. The administrative complaint procedure, that's something that I've kind of been honed in on all of areas of state government for the past couple of years, is that sometimes when the state issues a ruling through an agency or a department, there's rarely a chance to appeal that decision. So I do think it's important to have an administrative complaint procedure built in as well so that there is a review. Representative Casas.
I totally agree with that. I agree with the timeline laid out. I have a question. Julie, how many folks are enrolled in the Democratic and the Republican Party, generally speaking?
it's in the, both are in the range of between 300 and 350,000. And the Libertarians, the Greens are around, Green Independents are between, I think, 35 and 40,000, and I think the Libertarians at last count had about 5,600 enrollments.
Thank you. And I only ask that question, Senator, because it's, as a person who doesn't have a party and blah, 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 when you see those numbers, 300 plus thousand in both major parties, and then you look at a 10,000 person enrollment threshold, I know it's 5,000, and I guess I'm still a little confused on where the 10,000 kicks in, because every place that I look for the minor party status, it says 5,000. But can you see from a minor party startup perspective that you have these two behemoths that will never go below 10,000 for the foreseeable future? And so the threshold for you to maintain, or your, you know, those two parties to maintain their status is very comfortable. Yet for the small players, just a 5,000, you know, enrollment threshold is could be difficult. And so to kind of preclude them and make them reach that higher status is...
Two responses. Ask that same question to people in Hawaii. The Republican Party is in much danger there. Number two, I guess I'm confused as to your position, because you as an independent have two what I would call advantages. The first is you have more time to decide if you are going to run or not, because as we all know around this table, there's a lot of things that come into play to decide if you're going to run. Number one, I know everybody thinks that we are on the gravy train around here, getting our $12,000 salary, but that is quite not the case. You have to give up your life for 6 months of the year and not make any money. To come here. You have family issues to deal with. There's a lot of issues that come into play when running, especially when you run as a party, because you may have a primary, as I did in 2010. You, as an independent, have a longer time frame to make that decision. You do have to get a little bit more signatures, but in a House race that's not insurmountable, because you can get them from anybody, any registered person in your district. So I think that the system accounts for the fact that you are of no party or you're of a movement that is trying to get party status. I think that the system accounts for that. So if the question is, how do we get to the general election ballot, that problem's been solved. The question is, what does it take to become a party? And that's the question that I think that we're trying to get at.
If I could, Senator. No, I completely agree with you, and I think that we're just at two different places as far as what the barrier to entry should be. I think it should be a very low threshold, and I'm guessing that you think it should just be a higher threshold, and that's understandable.
I think that we should comply in the strictest possible terms what the court has prescribed. That's what I think. I don't think it should be higher or lower. I think we should apply the law as the court sees it. Representative Hickman.
So what is the motivation for the convention determination of the nominee for the general election ballot?
It's a method that some other states use instead of having them qualify candidates through a primary system, the minor parties. There are states that have a two-track system, and assistant AG advisor looked through some of the other laws and pulled that out as a way.
And in those states, there have been no challenges to that two-track way to get a nominee for the general election ballot?
I don't believe so, just based on having two tracks. I mean, there may have been provisions that were more strict or less strict that people challenged. But
and so to understand Senator Mason's concerns, you just don't want there to be two different ways for people to get to the general election ballot, whether the party is major or minor.
Yep, I think I might have to just amend that a little bit as you said it. I think that I don't want people to have two different ways to nominate a candidate in it for their party. So the reason, the question you just asked was the reason for the convention. It was a compromise to say, okay, there's going to be a longer time frame for you to get your signatures, or you can nominate through a more difficult process through a convention. We've all been through party conventions, save for Representative Casas. It's not easy to pull off a convention. It's very difficult. So those were the trade-offs. Either more time to qualify traditionally as a party, or less time and a qualifying convention. Did I say that right, Julie? Do you mind tapping your mic?
I'm trying to think. Maybe it's the other way around.
I might have said.
Right. The convention is allowing them more time to qualify for the general election ballot.
Yeah.
And, you know, the difficulty in our side on the court case was that without an administrative complaint procedure, I mean, I had in my mind, I know that December 1st isn't all that early because, you know, this court case wasn't settled until mid to late May. I think it was May 16th. So we had ballots printed a month earlier than that for the Yukawa voters. So, but now having, and I should have put a chart for you, and I didn't do that. I have a start of one on paper here, but I did calculate for my testimony all the dates that are built in. If everybody took the maximum amount of time to exercise their appeal rights or challenge rights or us to make our decision and all of that, even January 2nd, I mean, I still think December 1st would be great. I think we've got to give a little, but that does just get everything resolved a mere, you know, 12 days, I think it was, before we have to have ballots for military and overseas voters. So, but now with that complaint procedure, that gives them an avenue that we have a hearing, we look at the merits, we try to see whether there were issues with towns not registering, you know, eligible voters or accepting enrollments, maybe rejecting improperly. We could resolve a lot of that and maybe resolve it at that point, or if it still didn't resolve, they would still have their due process, which they just did not have in the current law.
Did we get written testimony from Mr. Lyons? Or was it just verbal?
I think it was just verbal, correct?
Correct.
Representative Casas.
Thank you. I wanted to circle back to what Danielle was saying. I guess I'm still confused about the 10,000-person threshold, because as I read through it, it seems like there's a really clear, you just have to be 5,000.
I think when I talked about the 10,000, I was talking about existing law. So existing law, there's a threshold of 5,000, and it doesn't make a distinction between because we don't, or major or minor. So if you want to form a new party by enrollment, the threshold is 5,000 voters. So if you look on your bill on page 3, so that's the existing law. And so the formation of a minor party by party enrollment as proposed under the bill also has that 5,000 threshold. So it doesn't change that threshold when you are forming a new party by party enrollment. So when you're submitting that application saying you've had that many voters enrolled in your party. So that's, it's not like this bill created a lower threshold for enrollment. There's a different threshold when you want to maintain your party status as proposed under the bill, but initial application is, it doesn't really change from what's in current law. So that was the point I was trying to make. So sorry if I wasn't clear on that.
And just, I know it was asked, but it's on page 1, line 31, is the qualification to have 10,000 voters enrolled in the party that voted in the last general election. That's what parties have to do to keep their status right now. all parties. That's where the 10,000.
So, not actually, that made it more confusing for me. So we have, so to gain party status, you have to have 10,000 people. Is that what I'm hearing?
If you are applying for party status, I'll let Julie answer.
Yes.
Sorry. Okay.
Julie.
Current law, if you look at where Danielle said on page 3 of the bill, line 38, regardless of the changes that are in this bill, without those, you still, to qualify, any party to qualify would be 5,000 voters. And the date currently is by December 1st of the odd-numbered year. Once you've qualified, then you have to, by the general election, in the even-numbered year, you have to have 10,000 people who are enrolled and vote in the general election in order to keep your party status. So that's line 31 on page 1. That's what's in existing law. This bill proposed a slight difference, which is major parties would meet that, and minor parties would continue to have 5,000 people enrolled. And that was in the new section being proposed on minor parties.
So it is that they would have to just be able to maintain 5,000 for the minor party status?
In this bill proposal.
Right.
But in current law, everybody has to get the 10,000 people. Right.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Always.
Thank you. Would they appear differently on the ballot? Would it appear now with, Senator Mason, major party player, Representative Casas, minor party, unenrolled person? They would not appear differently at all.
The ballot layout is the same. It just, you can list your three word designation, party designation.
And that's the point, I guess, is that if the problem is appearance on the ballot in the general election, giving people a choice, there is a remedy for that that is both constitutional and in statute. If the question is, what does it take to have the word Republican under your name, that is what we're trying to solve here. So I disagree in that we don't have a good remedy to get people on the ballot in the general election. We do. And under current law, it is also okay for an independent party candidate to have three words to describe themselves. So if somebody wanted to describe themselves as a conservative libertarian, they could do that. And that would be on the ballot.
Mm-hmm. Are they allowed to use libertarian? Because it's snagging up someone's... If libertarians were a qualified party... I wouldn't be allowed to put any Republican or Democrat because those are qualified parties.
Correct, but they're not a qualified party. So you could do it. So the access to the general election ballot is settled. It's what does it take to become a party? And I do think that there should be... parties are about a collective idea. And there should be enough people of your collective idea to register and to grant that party status to someone. Representative Lucchini.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry that I just walked in the middle of this.
Who are you?
Yes, right. So I think, and it's probably already been discussed, but I think a big portion of this is addressing the concerns from the courts in the lawsuit, which I think you've all probably talked about. And I think some of those we can address. I think the distinction from major and minor party, pretty much it's just that one, the minor party would be choosing a candidate by convention, and the major parties would be primary, and then they'd have the 5,000 threshold. Is that right, Julie?
Under this bill proposal,
right.
That's what it would be. Yeah.
I tend to think that everybody should have uniform standards across all parties rather than creating a different track to that, if I'm repeating.
We agree.
Yeah. Okay. that all parties should be held to the same standard.
That's
right.
Yeah,
you know.
And
Democrat
and Republican.
That's your words, not mine.
Yeah. So I think uniform standards, but dealing with the concerns of the court about that the difficulties the Libertarian Party had should be the issue for me to address with this bill. Okay. So I think the big things that the court addressed in reading the court case is the date was an issue. I think December 1st of when they had to put the signatures in was one of the biggest issues. So I've tried to find the date that we could do it, change it most. And Julie, perhaps you would know, if we wanted to apply the same standard to all parties, regardless of size, the latest really that we could have them submit signatures for enrollment would be January 2nd, the election year.
That's right, in order to have the administrative complaint procedure.
Right. And then the other part of the court case was that there was no appeals process for when some of the signatures, I think, got denied. So Section 8 of LD 1571 puts in place that appeal process so that, in this case, the Libertarians could have had a way to appeal the signature rejections. And I think under current law, and Julie, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, after the new party enrolls, they have until the general election to get up to the 10,000 enrollees. Is that right?
It's 10,000 enrolled and vote in the general election. So we don't just look at enrollment. We look at, after the voter history is done, we look at how many from each party actually voted.
Right. Okay. I think in terms of that, I'd be happy to push it out to two elections to give them more time to build their base and get a bigger number, and it would give parties a bigger amount of time to develop. And I'd be fine with that. And I think
it's 1 year.
Just two general elections after they begin their enrollment, because the way it's written now, if it was January 2nd, they'd only have until November to really build up. But if we gave two general elections, then they would have time to build up their base. So they start on that track, but then go to...
So they'd have a four years, at the most,
Yeah.
But it could be as short as a little under 3 years, depending on when one started. Okay. Representative Hickman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I'm where you're at yet, Mr. Chairs. But it doesn't mean I can't get there. I think I know that we can do what we do in Maine, and we can lead, and we can follow or not. But I am curious to know if we can get data before a vote on the states that allow for minor parties to nominate by convention, and this is a lot of research, and how often that actually happens in those states. Because I'm just curious. If someone knows, great. If we can look into it, that would really be my request.
I'm going to channel Danielle for a minute. I'm channeling you. There is actually some of that research that was done through NCSL in another folder. On party status, how to qualify, and I don't remember which folder it is, but we had it in here. Representative Casas.
I just wanted to throw out a random factoid. I did a research project on Minnesota. In Minnesota, I don't know exactly their thresholds or barrier to entry, but they actually have a lot of minor political parties, and I think they have one of the highest voter turnouts in the country.
Hand out 295. I think some additional information on qualifying standards was provided. And just the last part, before I forget, we would have to retroactively, whatever we move forward with, do a retroactivity clause so that the Libertarians wouldn't have to start from scratch, but they could take their signatures from where they've come before.
I guess I don't know. know, I don't know if this is premature or not, but I'm comfortable with the position that was laid out by Representative Lucchini and in part by myself. I would be more than willing to vote on that now. I think with an administrative complaint procedure in there, I think that's important in any layer of government. I think you should have an appeal process and those type of things. I think I'm very okay with the essentially the four-year time schedule, two general elections. Keeping the qualification at 5,000, maintained at 10,000. So if anybody wants to steal my words and make that a motion, that's fine. Mr. Hickman.
Would it be okay to get any input from Mr. Lyons on this, just because he's here, and this was a very, this is almost inside baseball, and I just didn't know if that was okay or not.
We can, but as I like to do, have one questioner at a time. Is there any more questions for Julie? Okay. Thank you, Julie, as always. Mr. Lyons, I think Mr. Hickman might have some questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Lyons, for being here. Basically, just your general thoughts on what you've heard about amending the bill to remove convention nominations for minor parties.
There's 3 points. The first being is, actually, major parties do have an advantage with their large enrollment, which makes it harder for the proposed minor parties to get enrollment. Two, nomination by convention, there still will be challenges, but it will be done within the party and not at the cost of expense of time and resources and tax dollars for those primary challenges, unlike major parties, which can have it on paper and it's done monitored by the state. Nomination by convention, we'd face the same issues, but we pay for it ourselves. The third point is basically you still have to go through the same processes but as the major parties, but you have a different start point. So obviously major parties have a huge advantage. That's why we don't have but one minor party in the state of Maine in its history. Those states that, I believe there's about 15 of them, do have nomination by convention, and as Deputy Secretary of State Julie stated, there seems to be no real problems with that. It's really a stepping stone, and if there's concern that a minor party, whether it's Libertarian Party of Maine or Independent Greens or any future ones, have a distinct advantage, I think history clearly shows they don't. If anything, because of the process in place, they are facing many disadvantages. I think we can address that and through a minor party designation without incurring costs to town, municipalities and the Secretary of State's office to determine the long-term viability of a minor party. If they're good, they will last, and they could grow to a major party. Did I answer the question?
You did answer the question. I appreciate that. Has there ever been any discussion in this committee over the years in Maine about having parties nominate candidates for a general election only by party convention and not the primary ballot?
I
ask the question because primaries are paid for by the state, and they are, I mean, the state is paying for parties to nominate their candidates for general elections.
I don't know. I can't recall in my time in this committee that we've had anything like that. But I don't know that that subject matter would come up except for today, because the trend nationally and I mean, there's obviously been a push in Maine, is to open up the party selection process to everyone. And so I think, which I oppose, but I think that it's just the trend has not allowed for that to happen.
Well, I think that given that you just mentioned the trend, and because we've had a bill in front of this committee that would allow for people not enrolled in parties to participate in primary elections, the argument is because the state's paying for the election, why can't people outside of the parties participate in it? And so while the trend is moving in that direction, I was just wondering about if this committee even ever talked about just state parties nominating their candidates for the general election, as we used to do, well, with the caucus. But my point is that if the general tax dollars of the state are going to be used for parties to choose their candidates, it would seem wise that parties choose their candidates by state convention and not burden the taxpayers with that particular process.
Fair statement. I think it's outside the scope of this bill. I understand the point.
The reason why I think it's in the scope of the bill is because you're talking about making it so that everyone nominates their party's general election candidate in the same way, mm-hmm. not one way or the other. And it would seem to me that it's fairer if it's by state convention than by primary election ballot that the state's paying for. So it is and it isn't within the scope of the bill, but it's coming up because we started by saying, I don't want there to be two tracks mm-hmm. for getting on the general election ballot for any party of any size. And I might agree with that if it were the other way around, meaning that we were proposing to require that state parties in convention nominate their candidates for the general election versus the primary election ballot.
Is there any further questions for Mr. Lyons? And just Mr. Lyons, for everybody's edification, as the chairman of the Libertarian Party. Seeing none, you're dismissed, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Casas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of building on what Representative Hickman was saying, do you consider that to be a decent compromise, the fact that the threshold for, you know, maintaining party status is lower, however, those parties are not burdening the state financially? That seems like a decent compromise.
It's not a compromise in my view, because it's the exact opposite of what I wanted to happen.
Honest about it.
I'm really concerned that what happens is that the voters, the people of the state of Maine, have the best possible way to elect candidates to become their elected officials. If we see that there are certain liabilities, certain disadvantages for some, a very small number of people, do we improve the election process? Do we improve the whole governmental process by saying, instead of addressing that, let's make those disadvantages available to everybody? If we have more disadvantages, will we have a better electing system? I don't think so.
I would love that. I think I'm ready to make a motion if people are. So I'd amend 1571 to ought to pass as amended, changing the enrollment date from December 1st, changing it to January 2nd of the election year, adding with it the administrative procedures outlined, I think, in Section 8 of the bill so that they can appeal any decision from the Secretary of State, allowing newly formed parties until the second general election after formation to reach qualified party status under our current statutes. That way every party is treated the same, but giving them additional time, making it easier for them to, or additional time to get there, striking all the major minor parties, leaving it all uniform, and adding a retroactivity clause from LD 295, Section 2, that would allow the Libertarian Party to take all the signatures that they have and move forward with that without having to start from scratch.
Is there a second? moved and seconded. Representative Lucchini, Representative Schneck, respectively, ought to pass amended. Is there further discussion on the measure? Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. All those in favor of ought to pass as amended, please signify. Opposed to it? The vote is 11-1. Representative Casas, what is your amendment?
The same thing with the time.
Isn't that, I think that you're contradicting yourself on that amendment.
Sounds to me like you want the bill with retroactivity provision added.
Yes, and I apologize because the beginning portion of your motion, I was talking with Representative Longstaff, so I did miss that beginning portion. So maybe I'll work with Danielle on it afterwards.
You have to say what it is.
So the bill, but with the extension to the second, for the second general election, to give the folks more time, and the retroactivity clause for the Libertarian Party. Does that make sense?
I don't know if the second election thing would conflict with the major minor party track. I don't know.
Well,
but I'm not sure. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe
better. The maintenance of status under the bill is lowered, so it's 5,000 rather than 10,000 for a minor party.
Yes. Yes.
So not just right. And so that's what you want.
Yes.
And then so you still want to give them the extra election cycle to obtain that?
No.
I guess that's okay.
No.
So essentially, yours is the bill with the retroactivity for the Libertarian Party.
Yes.
Okay, Danielle, do you have enough clarity?
I do.
Okay, so two ought to pass as amended reports.